Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Before we get to today's podcast, I wanted to update you on a couple things that occurred after we recorded the podcast with Matt Baker talking college football today, one of our favorite shows of the week. But first of all, the Bucks have removed John Gruden, former head coach, winner of the first Super Bowl in franchise history, removed them from their Ring of Honor. Of course, on yesterday's podcast, we talked about how he was just let go by the Raiders for some comments that were made in emails 10 years ago as part of the investigation into the Washington football team. The statement from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers says the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have advocated for purposeful change in the areas of race relations, gender equality, diversity, and inclusion for many years. While we acknowledge John Gruden's contributions on the field, his actions go against our core values as an organization. Therefore, he will no longer continue to be a member of the Buccaneers Ring of Honor. We'll have a lot more of this tomorrow. Rick will have his comments, of course, on tomorrow's podcast, which will also preview the Bucs-Eagles Thursday night game. Short week, of course, this week. So that'll all be on tomorrow's podcast. We'll also answer some mailbag questions. If you have questions about John Gruden or the Rays' early departure from the postseason, or the Lightning, who had a very uninspired effort on Tuesday night, the banner was raised. Everyone was cheering and excited for that. And as John Cooper, and I'll paraphrase, he said, "We watched the banner go up, and then we watched a team try to win a hockey game, and it was not the Lightning." So there was a lot of watching going on in the team. They ended up losing 6-2, gave up 3 empty net goals as they were trying to create anything late, which is how they, once they pulled the goalie, they started scoring some goals too, and finally got some any activity in the offensive zone. But it was just a bad night. Pucks were bouncing all over the place. Passes were way off. It's not a night we see very often with the Tampa Bay Lightning, but they were definitely not an effort they want to repeat or probably even watch the tape on. It was that bad. So, but again, John Gruden removed from the Bucks Ring of Honor. We'll talk about that tomorrow. The Lightning lose their season opener for the first time. They'd won 7 straight season openers. So they are 0-1-0 to start the season, but the banner did go up in the building in front of a sold-out crowd of 19,092. So that's what's going on now. And without further ado, here's Rick Stroud with Matt Baker.
All right. Well, it's my favorite time of week. And Matt, I got to tell you, you cover a crazy sport because, listen, college football was never more fun, I think, and maybe I'm just getting nostalgic, than it was last Saturday all across the country. These games were nutso and scoring galore, comebacks all over the place, upset city. It was remarkable, and it started for me with the Red River rivalry in Oklahoma and Texas.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I was at the Florida Vandy game, which was going on at the same time. So I'm just seeing like little bits and pieces on Twitter, mm-hmm. and I've got a lot of friends from Texas and Oklahoma, and it's just following it that way was nuts. Got to see a couple highlights. You know, that's going on, and then my wife's texting me about it as well. She's from Texas, and you know, we used to live in Oklahoma for a couple of years. So that's a game that means a lot. And you know, just talking to my 4-year-old afterward, how much he enjoyed watching that game. And then while that's going on, Ole Miss Arkansas is absolutely nuts. And yeah. We're still doing post game interviews on Zoom, right? So cover the Florida Vandy game, go into kind of the part of the press box, kind of the lounge area. Lounge makes it sound fancier than it is, but everybody kind of has their own little station. We're all going to zoom in, and everybody's kind of watching out of the corner of their eye the last couple plays of Arkansas Ole Miss before Mullen comes on. Oh, okay, Mullen's here. We actually have to work now. and that was just the noon window. That was just the first spot of Saturday.
It was nuts, and they were going on simultaneously. I mean, first of all, you don't see a lot of teams come back from 28-7, to say the very least. No. And you know, Texas obviously a new coach, and here they had a chance to take down Oklahoma. Spencer Rattler is benched. He's missing some easy throws. Lincoln Riley turns to Caleb Williams, who's a, you know, a five-star recruit, of course. And this kid leads them back with just an amazing comeback. The score was tied 48, which is just over a minute left. And then, Williams takes them, 75 yards. And then they get Kennedy Brooks' 33-yard touchdown run, really just trying to set up a field goal in that situation. And then Texas winds up scoring. So my question would be, Spencer Rattler, I mean, a guy that at the beginning of the year people were trying to compare, I think mistakenly so, to some of the other Oklahoma quarterbacks like Baker Mayfield and others. What happens now? I mean, does a guy like that suddenly say, hey, this looks like it's Caleb Williams' show, I'm in the portal? I noticed that Lincoln Riley wouldn't even let Rattler talk after the game. Or, I'm sorry, Williams talk after the game, which was wild.
Right. Well, I don't remember Lincoln's rule exactly, but Caleb Williams is a freshman. A lot of coaches don't let freshmen talk
That's
to
true.
Media.
That's true.
You and I are the only people who are going to care about this, but that's going to be an interesting rule to watch in the coming years, because it's one thing when the coach wants to control everything and it's my message and my team and my rules. That's fine. I get it. Yeah. Not complaining. Yeah. I don't agree with it. And there's been times in my job where it's really challenging, but that's their rules. That's fine. What will be interesting then is with name, image, and likeness, where Caleb Williams is going to want to be out there, or maybe not Caleb Williams specifically, but another Caleb Williams at some point down the line. A freshman is going to want to be in front of the media, going to want to be talking, going to be able to show himself as a marketable person that, hey, local car dealer, hey, chicken restaurant, whatever it is, I'm somebody that you should be in business with. So I don't. That's just a little. Again, you and I are the only people who probably care about that. But what you said just reminded me of it. With Spencer Rattler here, it's going to be interesting. He's been good, I think, over his OU career. I mean, he torched the Gators in the Cotton Bowl, but he hasn't been that Baker Mayfield, Sam Bradford, Kyler Murray, Jalen Hurts type player that OU has had at quarterback over the years.
Right.
He's good enough to where someone will want him. If he wants to go in the portal, someone will take him. I don't know if he's going to want to, if he's been in his head this whole time, I'm 3-and-done, I'm going to the league no matter what, and I've got enough arm talent where somebody will take me. But I think the more likely scenario is he kind of gets Felipe Franks, except without the injury, where he loses the job, and then he's going to have to make a decision for himself. I wouldn't think he would want to transfer and enter the portal right now. I think the best thing for him is to stick around because, for all we know, God forbid, but Caleb Williams goes out and gets hurt on the first snap next week, right? In which case it'd be Spencer's show again. So I think the short-term thing is he sticks around as the backup, and then long-term he enters the portal and is somebody else's starting quarterback next year.
Yeah, weighs his options in the NFL, which I think he'll be able to do, and I'd be shocked if people say this guy's a can't-miss first-round type talent at quarterback. Is still, even in a lose, or in a loose, even in a loss, does Steve Sarkisian, you hate to go down that way, obviously, but does that give Texas some hope that in one of the craziest Saturdays they take Oklahoma to the mat?
I think it probably does. But patience in Austin does not last long. They have more money than God. And at some point, barely losing to Oklahoma is not good enough. I mean, it's not going to be that situation this year. Even people in Texas aren't that crazy because Texas isn't that bad. But at some point, it's going to have to be more than that. But yeah, I think he showed a little bit of proof of concept that he knows what he's doing. He can have a fun, high-scoring offense and play a very good team down to the wire. And for right now, where Sark is and where the Longhorns are, I think that's good enough.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It was entertaining football. A shame that they lost with that kind of lead. Well, you mentioned a minute ago Ole Miss and Arkansas. I guess if you score a touchdown on the final play of the game It's your prerogative to roll the dice and go for the two-point conversion, but man, what a tough way to lose 52-51. Wow.
I'm okay with the call. You know, look, I think top to bottom, Ole Miss probably has more talent, mm-hmm. and in which case, the longer the game goes, the more likely it is that the talent's going to win. Certainly, they've got a great quarterback in Matt Corral and everything. So, yeah, I'm fine with the call. Go for it. Roll the dice. Say you trust your guys and let the chips fall where they may. And, you know, unfortunately for the Hogs, the chips fell the other way. But goodness, I mean, what a game. And you know, Arkansas is good. Like, I think Ole Miss is good. I think Arkansas is good. And the SEC is always tough. You know, I cover a lot of SEC football, obviously, and that's the whole thing. It just means more and all that stuff. But really, the SEC is very, very good. And it's a... I'm sure we'll get to the... I guess there was another SEC West game of some sort.
There's one coming up, right? Coming up soon here.
We can talk about that in a second. But the SEC is wild because aside from Georgia... Georgia's a great team, period. They're the only great team in the country. But then there's a lot of really good teams, good to really good teams in that next tier, that anybody can beat anybody and screw somebody up to the point where, you know, Jimbo can beat Alabama and Arkansas and Ole Miss can go the wire. And then I wouldn't be surprised if Arkansas, I don't even know who they play next, but it will go back and forth and those West teams will beat each other up the rest of the season. But I think they're pretty much all pretty darn good.
Yeah, and entertaining football. You just leaked it there a little bit. The Texas A&M Jimbo Fishers upset Alabama. It finally happened. One of Nick Saban's former coaches finally took him down. It's taken this long, which is just remarkable. But what do you say about the Aggies' young quarterback who wasn't supposed to be their starter at the beginning of the year, obviously? Two touchdowns in the first quarter. You know, he stays in the game. I mean, 21 straight points. The Crimson Tide rolls off. They got a lead, 38-31. And here he comes, six-play, 65-yard drive, and then the game-winning field goal, of course, which was terrific. I mean, this game had it all. And I was proud of the Aggies. I thought they were going to let it go, and they came back and they won that thing.
When Alabama blocked the punt for the touchdown, Well, that's it. Everybody, go home. We're done here. That's the play they needed. Just because we've seen that from Alabama before. I mean, there was one.
Absolutely.
I can't remember 16 or 17. There's one year where they scored, I mean, just 1,000 non-offensive touchdowns. Because that's just how excellent they were at everything. And you think at that point, all right, the game's over. And then A&M, goodness, to their credit, they take the kickoff, the ensuing kickoff to the house.
96
and
yards.
That was, to me, one of the big plays because, like I said, it could have easily spiraled out of control. Alabama still has this Alabama mystique. And so you could see it when Alabama makes a play, when they take the lead, when they block the kick, you could see it going the other way. Oh, these guys are back. And it didn't to Jimbo's credit, to A&M's credit, and you know, like you said, Zach Calzada. I don't understand A&M. I don't. I mean, look at this. Okay, they beat Kent State in the opener. Whoop-de-doo. 10 points against Colorado. Now, some of that was the starting quarterback got hurt, but okay, maybe give him a pass. 34 against New Mexico. That's not bad. 10 against Arkansas. 22 against Mississippi State, which is a decent team, not great. And then 41 against Bama. I don't know where that came from. I really don't. I guess the, you know, Jimbo's a good quarterback coach. We know this. I think the bloom kind of went off the rose a little bit in the post-Jameis era because FSU cycled through mediocre quarterbacks. And then, you know, Kellen Mond was fine at A&M. He wasn't great. He was fine. So maybe our perception of Jimbo as a quarterback guru went away, but he just needed a couple weeks with Calzada to figure out what's this guy do best. How can I put him in the best position possible to make plays? And then he was able to do that against an Alabama defense that is not great. It's not the Alabama defense that we're used to. And you know, A&M's defense also was able to hang with Alabama's offense early, particularly Alabama's offensive line was not very good, which is stunning because Alabama usually is very good along the lines, and B, Doug Maroney is their freaking O-line coach. They've got an NFL head coach, former NFL head coach, as their O-line coach. on an offense coordinated by a former NFL head coach, and it wasn't that good. I don't know what to make of that.
Well, it was a huge win, I think, for Jimbo, and obviously he's done a great job with Calzada, and you know, I thought the kid was very accurate. He was poised, and you know what? Every now and then, the field goal kicker makes it, and there was—I don't know if you saw on Twitter. There's just a great shot of Small's family, what these families go through.
Oh yeah.
But my goodness, what drama that was! Looked like it was maybe heading outside the left upright, and then hooks back in, and that place went absolutely crazy down there in College Station. That was some kind of fun. Not to be outdone
one thing on the kickers.
Yeah,
I don't care what my kid does for a living. I don't care. I want him to have success. I want him to do better than his old man. All that stuff. I do as long as he's not a kicker. I could not imagine what you would be going through as a parent watching that.
Terrible.
Just because, I mean, it's completely out of your control, and nobody cares about the kicker unless he makes the winning field goal or doing something. I could not imagine how nerve-wracking that would be. I would be, oh my goodness, I would be like. I'd look like Urban Meyer during a game or after a loss, just doubled over, hands on my head, like I'm having a kidney stone or something. That's what I would be.
Yeah. These days when you say you'd look like Urban Meyer, you have to be very careful with that analogy. But
yes.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're
Fair
talking
point.
About. It's funny that you would go to the game, and then in the penultimate moment when your child is about to make or miss the winning field goal, you literally don't watch and cover your eyes, head in the laps, and just listen for the crowd noise. But boy, that was really great drama. I thought it was unfortunate. I really thought that Penn State had Iowa. They had control of that game, 14-3 at halftime, but then they lose their senior quarterback, Sean Clifford, to an injury towards at the end of the half. It was tough duty, right, for Taquan Roberson to come in and you know, and see his first action. But Iowa gets the win, and, you know, I mean, right now they're in great shape to maybe make a spot in the national, you know, championship picture.
They're in the picture. I'm still skeptical. And
yeah.
Maybe that's not fair to Iowa, because they're not the sexiest team. Look, let's face it, they're not. Look, I've got them two in the country. I'm looking at my AP poll. I've got them two in the country. I don't think they're a bad team or anything like that. And to their credit, they've handled business by and large. You look at the schedule. Colorado State 24-14 was a closer win than it should have been because the Rams are not very good. Everything else, they've played very well, including the win over Penn State. They just don't have all of the high-end dudes necessary. You know, there's a guy, Bud Elliott, used to write for Tomahawk Nation. Now he's at 24/7 Sports, a Florida guy. He does this thing every year, the blue chip ratio, where if you go back as long as recruiting rankings have been a thing, every team that has won a national championship has more 4/5 stars on their roster than 2 and 3 stars. There's about a dozen schools every year that are in that mix, and you know the ones that they are. It's Ohio State and Alabama and Clemson and Georgia and those guys. If you're not in that mix, maybe you can get to the playoff. Maybe you can. But I don't think you can beat a Georgia and an Oklahoma or a Georgia and you know, Ohio State, whoever it is, in back-to-back games to win it all. But look, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Right now, Iowa is a very good team. They're one of the best couple teams in the country. And look, Kinnick Stadium, I've never been to a game there, but it's pretty high on my list because that is a very, very tough place to play. And we saw that Saturday afternoon against Penn State.
It's a great atmosphere. And, of course, the whole Children's Hospital thing is a great tradition that they have there as well. To say it was a big win for Mike Norvell and Florida State going into North Carolina and Chapel Hill and upsetting the Tar Heels is an understatement. So let's put it in perspective, Matt. They desperately needed wins, and to get it over a North Carolina team, which was probably more well thought of at the beginning of the year than they are currently, is still nonetheless for an ACC victory. Just put in perspective what the Seminoles were able to accomplish on Saturday.
Well, I think they were something like 18-point underdogs. Corey Clark from Warchant was trying to figure out if that was the biggest, like point spread-wise, the biggest upset in Florida State history. And
wow,
I at least starting, you know, kind of going the more modern era, last 40 years or whatever, just the numbers wise, that was absolutely huge for FSU. And I said last week, again, the Syracuse game, you could start to see things falling into place where, you know, particularly on offense, the coach say, okay, these are our playmakers. How can we know who they are now. We know who they are. How can we get them the ball in creative ways to let them make plays? And I think that continued against North Carolina, where maybe you're starting to see them turn the corner. I'm not saying that they're going to, you know, go from 0-4 to 8-4 or anything like that, but you can see them making progress. And once you have some wins under your belt, say, look, this what we're doing, it works, and we just proved it right here. Maybe you can see some momentum going, and you know, FSU is going into an open date this week. UMass next week. UMass is just god awful. Although, hey, credit to the Minutemen for beating UConn in what was an interesting game between the two worst teams in the country. And then things get interesting with Clemson at the end of the month. So maybe you can see FSU making some progress, and certainly with how awful things started for Norvell. The critics have kind of gotten quieter, and he's showing some proof of concept that what he's doing can work. It just needs more time.
Yeah, and listen, I think it does need more time. We talked about a year ago him coming in during the pandemic. I think all those coaches were behind it a little bit. But in culture, you know, we always talk about culture, chicken and the egg. Everybody comes in and changes. Winning is changing the culture. Wins are what you need, however you get them. But to your point, I think they do start to have an identity, start to have a better feel for their football team, start to understand how they're going to win games. And, you know, you grow with confidence each week. And so, again, I think Mack Brown and those guys have sort of underachieved at North Carolina. I thought they'd have a better year, and certainly their quarterback was well regarded. But by the same token, you know, there are no easy victories in college football, as we just saw this past Saturday. There was one in Gainesville, and you were there for it. The Gators took apart Vanderbilt, which is not a surprise. What I liked about your analysis, though, Matt, is that you saw some problems that the Gators may want to clean up before they get back into the hunt here.
Yeah, it was – Florida didn't play great. You know, they won 42-0. Give them credit for that. The second half was a lot better, but – the first half, you know, they were up 21-0. It should have been 21-13 or 14, but Vandy doinked one field goal, missed another, and then had a fourth down touchdown catch reversed on replay. That it looked like a touchdown to me, but what do I know? So there's still some issues. Emory Jones missed a wide open, I think it was Rick Wells, for what should have been a touchdown. Those are things you can't do in the SEC. When you got a receiver wide open, you have to hit him, and he didn't. The defense missed too many tackles. Penalties, I think, were an issue. And then injuries. Goodness, Florida was that without a couple guys anyway, and Richard Garage, Malik Davis, and Kyir Elam. Then Brendan Cox gets injured, and starting center gets hurt, and there were some issues there. Again, it didn't matter against Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's really bad. They're probably the worst Power 5 team in the country. And again, to Florida's credit, the score looked nice and they did what they were supposed to do in the second half. But if I'm looking at Florida beyond one game against a bad team, and what are they going to do the rest of the year? If they play the way they did Saturday, at least to start against LSU, they'll lose. And if they do that against Georgia, they'll get obliterated. And, you know, we can kind of spin forward ahead if we want, but this is a... Last week was crazy with college football. It absolutely was. This week, we're going to learn a lot about Florida and USF, and to some degree, Miami. Like these next 2 weeks are just pivotal for all three teams, I think, at least.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, Florida. Okay, so They head to LSU, which is having a horrible year. I mean, Ed Orgeron might find himself fired here before long if it continues to trend this way. But LSU has good athletes. LSU has tradition, and it's always difficult to play up there, right? I know it's a noon game. It's not a night game, which may or may not factor into it. So you've got the Tigers, and then the next week, you know, you've got Georgia, which is now, I guess, everybody's number one. We can get to the rankings a little bit later. But, yeah, I think this is a big week for Florida, and I think it's a big week for USF, too. You mentioned that, you know, they had their bye week. They come home and play a Tulsa team, which, you know, it's the old adage, they're better than their record. Well, this one might be, actually. They, you know, they started out and they lost to teams like Ohio State. They went and upset, I don't know if upset's the right word, but they beat Memphis. So this is a big test for Coach Scott's team, and he's got a home game at Raymond James on Saturday. They need to win this one.
They do. You look at Tulsa, they're not awful, but this is winnable.
Yeah.
When you start looking at the rest of this schedule, reading a schedule is boring, but hear me
right.
out. Tulsa and Temple at home, both winnable games. Mm-hmm. At East Carolina on a Thursday night, that's tricky. And then USF's got Houston, who's pretty good. You've got Cincinnati, who's very good. At Tulane, which is winnable but on the road, and then UCF, which, you know, they might actually have players not on the injury list at that point. So if I'm looking at this with how rough things have gone for USF, if they don't beat Tulsa and or Temple next week, I don't know that there's a win on this schedule the rest of the way. Again, you never know. This is a crazy sport. Weird things happen. Maybe at Tulane, but it's hard to pencil in a win. I mean, I can't pencil in a win if they don't win one of the next two. And at that point, things get really tricky. I don't know at what point Jeff Scott needs to worry about his job. I know USF is behind him and everything. And again, he had the year zero with the pandemic and all this. So I get all that. But if you go win two games your first 2 years, and both of them are against 1AA teams, FCS teams, that's a hard sell to keep going and to get a fan base energized and get recruits excited and all that stuff. So that, I mean, that's why these next 2 weeks are vital for USF. And, you know, I touched on it, but for the Gators, the LSU and Georgia games, look, Florida's goal is to win a championship. And unless crazy, crazy things happen, they're not going to. They can still have what I would consider to be a successful year, or at least some success this year, if they win the next two. LSU is still a rival. They still have talent. LSU is a tough place to play. And especially after what happened last year with the thrown shoe and everything, that would be a nice win for them. And then if they can find a way to beat Georgia, that would be obviously fantastic. And then you're looking at probably 10-2, maybe a New Year's Six Bowl. Again, right. It wouldn't be the way the season the Gators wanted, but it would be good. The other side is if you lose one or both of them, then you're looking at 8-4. And at that point, there's pressure on Mullen.
I'm not
saying he's going to get forced out or anything like that, but you go 8-4 back-to-back years, and you're not recruiting at a high level, trajectory going down, that's not great. It's not a good place to be. And this is a job that churns through coaches. It burns out coaches. That's what it does. And things will get very, very noisy. And things are already noisy. People are already restless around Gainesville. But then you tack on, if you lose to a down LSU team, a down rival, and then potentially Georgia as well, things will get very dicey.
Yeah, and Georgia has the ability to make you look really bad. That's a good football team. And they're the number one team in the country, and will be probably when they get to Gainesville on October 30th. So I'm with you. I mean, it's such a huge – it sounds easy enough to say, right, the difference between 8-10 wins in college football, but it is New Year's Day versus not. And no one hires coaches at Florida to win 8 games. They'd like them to win at minimum 10 and then preferably get into the SEC title game and win that at some point. But that hasn't happened yet for Coach Mullen. And – these next 2 weeks are going to be huge, but they're going to be good. So what did you I would imagine that your college football poll looked a little different. How far did Alabama fall after their loss? Where do you have your top five or 10 teams here?
Yeah, it's every Sunday when I do this, there's a different challenge. And some weeks there's just so much craziness and so many upsets that you rip it up and you start over and it takes a long time. This one, it didn't take that long. There were just a couple things I had to figure out. Obviously, Bama was the big one. I dropped him to fifth. I had him second, by the way. I had Georgia one. I could justify in my mind putting them anywhere from like 4 to 9, something like that. To me, Georgia, Iowa, Cincinnati, pretty clear 1, 2, 3. Mm-hmm. I feel good about that. I put OU ahead of Alabama. Advanced metrics that I look like really like Oklahoma, even though they had been a little bit shaky earlier in the year. And then you factor in, okay, maybe their offense has figured things out with the way they played against Texas and the quarterback situation. And then I put Bama in just ahead of Michigan. Michigan, obviously, they're undefeated, but they've had some performances that have not been fantastic. Rutgers was pretty close. Nebraska's getting better, but and I'm not going to begrudge Michigan for winning again at Nebraska, but there have been a couple performances that haven't been great, and Michigan doesn't have any good wins yet. I could argue that Alabama losing by a last-second walk-off field goal at Texas A&M is more impressive than any of Michigan's wins, just because of the way their schedules work so far. So that's kind of what I've got right now. I've got the Gators at 19, which I think the AP poll has them at 20. So I'm right in the same area. Mm-hmm. What will be, Michigan, like I said, I'm poo-pooed their schedule a little bit, but it's going to get interesting where they play Ohio State and Penn State and Michigan State in the next, the next 6 weeks or whatever it is. So Michigan's going to have chances to move up. And Ohio State has been playing very, very well here lately. They figure things out with your boy Stroud. And so maybe they're going to turn things around to the point where I feel good about Georgia in the playoff. Aside from that, I don't have any idea.
If there was a right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's going to come down to the wire. This is going to be a lot of fun when we get into conference championships and things like that. But if there was a rising team, and I know we got Cincinnati now in the top four, and deservedly so. But if there was a rising team that's out there that you say, watch out for these guys, and I think Alabama's going to eventually get back in the mix because I think the schedule will allow them to do that. But who would that team be if you had one that said, kind of a team to watch here in the final weeks?
Yeah, I think it's Ohio State, which is, how boring is that, right?
Well, it sounds boring, but I don't disagree with you is the thing. Like, I really do. I think they're going to get back in this.
Yeah, I mean, I think after the week two loss to Oregon at home, I don't want to say people wrote them off, but it's kind of, okay, well, it's going to be really hard for them to get back into it. But the last three games, put up 59 against Akron, okay, still. 52 against Rutgers, 66 against Maryland. Their offense is clicking. Whatever it is they didn't have early, they've figured it out. And I think they're going to continue clicking, and I think they're going to roll. The Oregon loss has the potential to be problematic, because if Oregon goes, Oregon lost to Stanford, but Oregon and Ohio State, if let's say they're both one-loss conference champions, Oregon will get in. And they should, because, look, we saw that game. It happened. Oregon won. Oregon should be ahead of Ohio State. Oregon's, though, has got some tricky stuff ahead, where they've got a lot of injuries. C.J. Verdell, their running back's hurt. Kayvon Thibodeau's been banged up. I could see Oregon slipping up at some point during the rest of their schedule, maybe not even winning the conference, which makes it that much easier for, Oregon, instead of kind of boxing out Ohio State, if they slide to the side, Ohio State's got a better shot going in. And top to bottom, they've got a lot more talent than Iowa. So I would pick Ohio State over the Hawkeyes if they were playing tomorrow in Indianapolis. So Ohio State's, to me, the one. Maybe Michigan State can somehow make it. They've been, to me, one of the most impressive teams in the country, where I didn't have super high expectations for them, but quarterback and receiver played well the other day. Kenneth Walker, I mean, he's on my very short Heisman list if I had to do it right now. I don't know that he'd be number one, but he would be on a very, very short list. So, Michigan State's another one that I'm kind of very curious to see how they go the rest of the year once their schedule heats up.
Well, Florida State is off, I believe. We mentioned Florida's at LSU. So where might you be headed? Are you going to stick home and see the USF Bulls, or what are we doing this weekend, Matt?
Yeah, I'm covering Florida LSU from the couch. I'm you know, Florida LSU is still crazy. There are so many weird things that happen in this rivalry, and I'm going to, you know, write about that later this week on the edition and on TampaBay.com. You know, where you look back in the thrown shoe last year, the Hurricane, I think it was Hurricane Matthew game in 2016, that you're ducking us. No, we're not ducking you. And then the Gators went on a goal line stand and all this stuff. There's so many weird things that have happened in this series. I am expecting weirdness on Saturday. There's no reason I should say this, but my gut tells me LSU is going to play really well and maybe even get an upset. There's zero logical reason why, because LSU is banged up. You know, Stingley and Butte, the receiver, are both out. You know, they've just got the doors blown off them at Kentucky. Edwards runs on the hot seat. There's zero logical reason why I would think LSU should be in this game. But it's LSU, Florida. Weird things happen. Maybe the Tigers kind of rally themselves around Coach O to try and save his job. And look, LSU was depleted last year and went into the swamp and won in one of the wildest games I will ever see. So I'm not predicting that it's going to happen, but a part of me thinks, yeah, LSU is going to find a way to do this stupid thing.
That's why we love this crazy game. It's college football, man, and we just had one crazy weekend for sure. Maybe headed towards another one. He's Matt Baker. You can follow him on Tampa Bay on TampaBay.com and in the Tampa Bay Times, covering Florida and LSU this Saturday. Thanks, Matt. We appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you.
So we got a busy weekend coming up, not just in college football, of course. And you guys don't have to wait for a mailbag or anything to send in your questions. We answer those all the time. Feel free to send those to us at SportsDayTB on Twitter. You can reach me on Twitter at NFL Stroud, or my email address is rstroud@tampabay.com. We're going to preview, of course, the Bucs at Philadelphia. Thursday night football didn't do too well a year ago when they went to Chicago on the short week. Tom Brady coming off the thumb injury. He says everything's going to be okay with that, but a difficult trek up there. Of course, Jalen Hurts, a lot of good Philadelphia defensive linemen. This is not going to be the easiest game in the world, trying to play their third game in 11 days. As the Bucs try to go to 5-1, if they're able to do that, then they get some time off, and then they will host the Chicago Bears before we get to the end of the month, of course, with the trip to New Orleans and see Jameis Winston and New Orleans Saints. So interesting couple of weeks. It's going to be a great weekend of college football, but send your questions in. It can be about the Lightning and their opener, of course, and starting of the season. Anything you got, be happy to answer those, as well as preview the Bucs at Philadelphia on Thursday night football. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.